Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Meg, who is here to speak with us about her recent recording and listening blog. Welcome, Meg.
Hello.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to participate this way.
Oh, it's fun, isn't it? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it would be fun to, you know, we talk about recording and listening a lot in practice, and I know for many folks it really has become kind of a centerpiece of their practice, but I also know that people struggle with it and they get talked out of it and the voices hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of we have a whole website, recordingandlistening.org, that often people forget about or they may not even know about it. And there's a really fun section of that where people in Sangha write blogs and they talk about kind of what they're seeing with their role in recording and listening practice, ideas they have, ways that they work with it, and so on. And so you wrote a really fun one recently, and I thought it would be fun to have you on to just talk a little bit about that. Tell us about what you were seeing and what you wrote about.
Yeah, all right. So, and I'm so grateful. I can't even remember how long we've had the recording and listening website.
I know, it's
like
been a while,
right?
Hasn't it?
A long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it because there's just so much available, and now we've just got such a rich resource. So, I'm grateful for everybody that's stewarding that, you know, because I know it's not an easy feat. So, I point people to that website quite a bit, actually. So for me, uh-huh. what I've been really seeing with recording and listening, and it's, you know, grown over time. So part of what I really appreciated what I was writing about in the blog was that it really has become, in addition with meditation, but one of the fastest ways for me to move from totally being identified with conditioning to like being aligned with life, like just that switch.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just one piece before. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt you, but I think part of what's so amazing too is that you begin to be able to clue in more quickly. Okay, I get it. I'm identified. No hard feelings, no judgments. But you know, because we hear ourselves in a way that we don't hear ourselves otherwise. So just that piece is really fun too.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, it's and I remember at one time, I kind of, the conditioning got, I was trying, you know, I would just go for the recorder, and it was like, it just got silent, right? And then it was like,
don't do that.
Yeah, exactly. Then it was like, oh, you got this. I'm like, oh, no, now I know actually that it's not just, you know, going for the recorder. I get to actually then turn on the recorder and, like, you know, out it and things like that. So, you know, just getting to see how it will use in different ways. And again, like you were saying, not taking any of it personally, just getting to see just uncovers all these different ways that it operates in my life.
Yes.
So, yes. Yeah, so that was one thing I was seeing for myself. And then among other things, I'm also a marriage and family therapist, and we've been lucky to be able to do training. You know, there's the recording and listening training, and to be able to work with other people who want to do recording and listening for themselves. So for people that come to do work with me, I have had so many people. There are some that are, you know, just not willing to. You know, they're just not willing, which is okay, right? And then for the people, though, that have, it's like they just, I mean, it's so fun because of the wonder and the amazement and the gratitude for the tool is really fun. And I'm just, and then I'm in such gratitude for our practice and the fact that, you know, that this kind of tool exists and that the guide has been so good at, like, continuing to have us just do this, right? Like, this is what we do.
Oh, exactly.
It really helps on
suffering.
Exactly.
Well, and that's so fun, Meg, from what you're describing. It's almost like you're sort of informally conducting a little, you know, whatever they call that when you're testing a new drug or a new thing or whatever, right? You've got your control group, the people who aren't doing it. You've got your your group of people who are doing it, and to be able to see so tangibly the difference in just the life experience and our own life experience.
And I have, there are some folks who've been diagnosed by the psychiatrist with like OCD and anxiety and panic attacks and things like that. And there, I mean, there's one I can think of right now. She is no longer on her medications anymore. She uses recording listening for any, and her OCD, like the stuff that she was, you know, feeling was a symptom of that is like just not a, she doesn't even talk about it anymore like that. So, I mean, she's, and that plagued her. She's for the last 20 years. And I have a, there's another young person that I see. She was having panic attacks daily, like probably multiple times a day is what she would consider a panic, you know, like the, I don't know, just lots of extra energy and feeling like she said she was going to die constantly. And like, they're like not there. They've just, she, cause she's, and she does recording every night. She does it during the day.
Wow. And, you know, I mean, it essentially, you know, as you mentioned, it's not that it takes the place of meditation, but it's that it's a such a tangible way to do what we're doing in awareness practice, which is learning to direct the attention. And that's, I project, what's going on with someone who, with all of us all the time, but it's more acute and obvious in someone who's suffering from intense anxiety or OCD or that sort of thing, where it's, I mean, it's crazy making. Your attention is not your own. It's being put in these places you have no say over and you don't want it to be there.
And you think it's personal and there's no way out, and there's and this is just what you have to do for the rest of your life, and that it is, and that, you know, going back to like there's, you know, there's something wrong with you, right? When when recording and listening has really helped me, you know, and I can only project for some of these other folks, just to take away, to see what is really true. So to have the direct experience, this is something I was writing about too, to keep saying yes to having their direct experience, and for me to have a direct experience of life being lived through this person. And when I get to direct the attention back there with recording and listening, I get to have that direct experience. And so whenever I hear a recording, I can go right back to that experience, like, or have that experience, you know, or have it when I take up the recorder. And so they're getting to have that. And you know, and to me, for me, I should say, along with, you know, all of the practice opportunities, I mean, it's, that's been a game changer for my life to be able to have this with me all the time. To have that mentor there and to have that direct experience of life living this person rather than conditioning.
Exactly. And it's truly a training tool. We were, I can't remember, I don't want to misquote it, so I can't remember exactly how it was being talked about this morning, but on the radio show this morning, that word training came up in such a profound way. And that place where, you know, so there's that realization, oh my gosh, my attention is being directed by this thing in my head that actually hates me, and it's torturing me with my own attention. It's torturing me with my own attention, right? And then to realize, oh, and there's a way for that not to happen. And then we set out to train, because it's, as far as I can tell, it's a lifelong moment-by-moment training. And the thing that changes, at least it did for me, and I, you know, I like to always put my hat in the ring as hang in there, because it wasn't for me an overnight kind of a thing at all. You know, even recording and listening wasn't, I mean, there's sort of that honeymoon period at the beginning of it, but then the slog through the resistance that conditioning puts up with. But I can just say, boy, that long-term wearing, sort of the long-term ability to truly have the confidence that I actually can direct my attention, or, you know, it's not even me. I guess I would say I can put my attention with life, and life takes care of me so exquisitely, beautifully. And that it's that tool, having that with me, that I can constantly train to do that. And so when I fall into a hole, I have that tool with me. And
that's right.
I know that I can use that tool.
Yes. And that's definitely been my experience too, for sure. That it doesn't, it isn't, it's like that place we've talked about where the mist, you know, you're walking through it, and at
exactly.
first it's just, sort of, it's just that mist, but then over time you're like, I'm soaked, but like
yes.
with all of life, you know, and,
yes.
and yeah, but you just have to keep practicing it, you know, and just staying in that place. So, and the last
yeah.
piece I'll say that we've stuck with my children too, so at the time she was 4 and we were doing recording listening with her. And so she still does it, you know, not all the time, but she, you know, is sticking with it. And so my son, who's now 4, won his recorder. And so nonchalantly walking by, his sister, who's now 6, was like, "So, you know, Max, it really helps me out. Like when I get stressed, I really would recommend doing the recording listening. It's great. It's a great tool." And I just,
my
God. Jaw was on the floor.
Like, I love
it. Like just continuing to show up, right? And it does things for other folks too. And then she was passing it on to, because it, you know, it was very different to hear from her versus me, right?
So Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different. And, you know, what strikes me about that, Meg, and gosh, we could do a whole other, you know, time on this, but that I was just looking at what an amazing thing at that time where we're, what's happening is as conditioned humans, as we become conditioned humans, we're trained out of essentially having a relationship with ourselves. We talk about it as being in relationship with life. So you picture really little kids, and of course they're constantly in relationship with life.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's that transition stage where, you know, as people were talking about on the morning show, I don't want to be around me. I don't want to be around, I want something fun, something good. And so to make that transition in relationship with yourself, to have a tool that puts me in relationship with me through that transition, wow, it's going to be, talk about an experiment. It's going to be fascinating to see what life is like for kids who grew up with that tool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, just you know, getting to see what it's done for us. We had to unlearn a lot and like keep using it.
Right, exactly.
Get through the resistance, what it'll be like for them as they get to move forward, getting to, like you said, staying in relationship with themselves or like with life, you know, with that tool when they forget, you know, or they get pulled away or their tension, right? So, So thank you. That was, it's been such a ride, and I'm so grateful, and I really would recommend everybody can hang it in there, keep them going, because it's amazing.
Yeah, and again, using that resource, as you said, that's got so much good stuff now after years and years of being up there, recordingandlistening.org.
Yes.
So thank you for being with us, Meg.
Thanks for having me, and I was grateful to be here, and have everybody have a great time on the show tonight.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so much. Take good care.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Meg. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And wasn't that amazing?
Wasn't that amazing?
That was amazing.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to have to, I wouldn't have to offer her much because Meg is a great person, but I so, as a marriage and family therapist, to write that up, to let people know it's possible, and for parents, just again, will there be resistance? Of course. But for the people who who will spark to it and might, I was talking yesterday, I guess it was, with a woman I don't know, but she has a 16-year-old son who suffers from anxiety and depression. And he's 16, and he's really struggling. And, of course, they want to put him on drugs, and he's afraid of it. He's afraid of the side effects. He doesn't want to do it. And mom is just completely hysterical. And so I'm going to set her up with a recording and listening trainer to work with the son. And I've already set her up with somebody to work with her. And just pray for a miracle for these folks who are really in a place. And that's one of the places that we all recognize they're desperate. You know, so I was telling people at a retreat recently about my teacher saying about people who have resistance to practice. He said, you know, for me, it's like I'm out in the middle of the ocean with a rubber raft, and I decide to take a razor blade to it. It's just not smart, you know, because if there's something that might work, that might help me in suffering, that might save me, why would I not give it everything I've got instead of going against it? And, of course, we know the answer to that question. But to have folks who know my back is against the wall. I'm desperate. I'll try anything. And the desperation outweighs the resistance of ego, and they do it, and then there's this kind of thing that Meg is describing with her clients.
It's incredible. It's so heartening and inspiring and motivating to hear the transformation that happens.
And to just keep trying. You know, that's what we're constantly doing, is we just keep putting it out there. Just keep putting it out there. Just keep, you know, and looking for the person who says, yeah, you know, I want to. So, as you know, we're in an email class right now, and we're at number 5 of 8 classes. And so now, you know, the broken record, the needle is firmly in the groove, you know, a recording and listening practice would really help you with that. I hope you'll consider a recording and listening practice, because that would really support you, you know. And usually after these classes, I hear from a few people who go, okay, you finally worn me down. I'm going to try it. And, you know, that's me job.
Yes, nag, loving nag.
Loving nag, yeah. I don't want people to suffer. Got something that can help that. You know, you just got to tell them and tell them and tell them and tell them. And it really is, you know, in that way, we're all like kids. You know, we just have to have that negativity worn down until finally we get to that place of, okay, I'll try.
Okay, I give up.
I give up, yeah.
And I loved that image of her 6-year-old talking to her 4-year-old. Oh, my God.
Oh,
I would love to see that on video. That would be incredible.
Yeah, it really helps me when I'm stressed. Wow.
I love that.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
And I have announcements here.
Oh, good. I'll tell you what, that'll give me time to drink some water. I have to confess what I just did. As you were unmuting me, I walked over to my sink, and there was a cup. There was some water in it. So I took a big swig of water, you know, in preparation for saying howdy. But it wasn't water. It was soap that I had put in the bottom of the cup to help with the tea stains. Yeah, it's not special. So as you're doing announcements, I'm going to drink a lot of water and probably start foaming at the mouth, but I'll at least know what it is.
Okay.
All right, what you got?
Good. Politics from Center, a group coaching opportunity, will offer support in mindfully engaging in a political activity in a way that challenges you to transcend fear and express deep caring in the world. The 4-week coaching session includes facilitated conference calls and email check-ins and it starts November 29th.
Just in time, we'll miss one holiday, but in time for the next holiday, for those family gatherings where people
yes.
get together who have very different points of view and got some skills there in talking with folks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Celebrate courage, generosity, and family as part of the Africa Project, and sign up for one of our fabulous fundraising teams this year. You'll also want to mark your calendars to join the 2018 Bridge Walk in Cantalomba via live stream on December 1st.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody is shy and doesn't have a team, I am struggling along with all of this, and just let me know. We'll do it together.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Just send an email to the guest master, huh?
Yeah.
That is information@livingcompassion.org.
Yeah.
And finally, coming up in December, Sangha will have an opportunity to celebrate this year and welcome a new one with a community of people dedicated to practicing conscious, compassionate awareness. The New Year's Retreat, December 27th through January 1st in Menlo Park, California, features meditation, group discussions, guidance with you, Sherry, and free time to spend in nature on the beautiful, spacious grounds.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised to hear you say that, because I thought the retreat was full. Mm-hmm. So maybe what's happening is that there are lots of slips between full and the retreat. So maybe they're taking a waiting list now. So people can check, but I got that information, I think, yesterday that it was full. So we shall see.
Okay. We shall see. And speaking of next year, the 2019 schedule is now posted. So check it out and mark your calendars.
Uh-huh.
And I have
checked
it out.
Mine.
And it's great.
Oh, is it? Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Fabulous. Love it.
Yeah. All
right. And for these other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. Were you going to add something?
I'm getting a text, so I think I might have spoken out of turn. So probably more on that soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation of about 5 minutes in length, focused on one topic, is great.
Uh-huh.
Okay, shall we get started, Sherry?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay.
Foaming has slowed down, I'm in good shape.
Okay, good. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Kelly. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hey, Kelly.
Oh, hello, Kelly.
I'm a student
in the email
class.
Oh, you are? Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I believe it was on the third email for the epitaph that you suggested I call in.
Oh, good. And you're doing it.
Yes.
Yay. All right.
And that was the one that was for the epitaph. And mine is that I'm devoted to raising my family, my daughters, to being a good wife, and just be in service to others. And I had some sadness come up, actually, that my epitaph is pretty much the same as what my grandmother's would be, I feel. And she's in the midst of Alzheimer's. So I am sort of in a transition point where for the last 8 years or so, I have used mostly my intellectual thoughts to just will that I would be ready to handle the passing of my grandmother and her forgetting me, not knowing who I am. And then in the last couple of months, she has progressed quite dramatically and really doesn't know who I am. And no amount of thinking that I did before prepared me for anything that I feel now. And so I have turned to meditation and now the recording and listening through the email class. And I feel good. I'm really proud of myself for how far I'm coming. But there's still this, the more I listen to it, the more I realize that there's a little child inside me that's on the verge of a tantrum, that no matter how much that I meditate and develop compassion for myself and for my Nana and everyone else in the world who's going through Alzheimer's, I still want to cry out and say, but I want my Nana. And I almost feel like the more that I'm trying really hard to transition and deal with the situation, I feel a lot of resistance to change coming up because so much of our relationship has changed because I don't exist to her. Our story, what we've built, what I've built in my mind for the last, however long, 30 years, doesn't exist anymore. When I see her, she thinks I'm her sister. And on some level, that's really great. I'm happy with it. But the kid in there is, like, angry and just wants her Nana.
And, Kelly, did you say you have children?
I do. I have two daughters.
And how old are they?
They're 7 and 4.
Okay. And so with either one of those little girls, if they were just dreadfully, dreadfully sad and disappointed about something, what would you say to them?
I would definitely probably start with empathy. I would tell them that it's okay to be sad.
It's okay to feel how you feel.
Right.
Of course you feel that way. Of course you feel that way. Of course. Now, can you let that very young part of you know that?
Yeah, I think that part of me knows that. I think I've gone there. I've said that to myself, that it's okay to be sad, it's okay to be angry or whatever else comes up.
And so is there an expectation then that should take care of it? That, okay, we need to move on now? Or is it okay that she continues to feel that way, that she feels that way every day, that she feels that way every time she sees her grandmother?
Yeah. I mean, it comes up all the time. So reality would tell me it's okay for her to stay in that pattern for a while, for it to have its time. And I'm not really rushing myself.
Good. Good. Yeah, and have you done enough with the recording and listening that you know about the two-handed recording?
No, I don't know what that is.
Okay, so on the website that Meg was, did you hear Meg talking about recording and listening?
Yes.
Okay, because your kids are the same age, right?
Right,
just about
right.
The same age. Yeah.
I'm going to get my kids recorders, yeah.
right, yeah. So on that same website, recordingandlistening.org, there are instructions for doing this. But I'll walk you through it. Okay. So you take your recorder, and you put it in your right hand. I'm going to get a text message here if I mess this up. So if I mess it up, I'll get a text message. I'll tell you the right way. Okay. Now you put it in your right hand, and you let that little girl just be as angry and upset and sad and grieving as she wants to be. You just let her say everything that she wants to say. And then you listen to it. Well, you sit there for a minute, take it in, you listen to it. You put it in the left hand before you listen to it, okay?
Okay.
So switch hands. That's a very important part of it, actually. Switch hands. You listen to what she has to say. So you listen to it when she was saying it, and then you listen to it through the recorder, and then you wait. And when you feel moved to say something to her, to comfort her, to reassure her, to let her know she's not alone and that she's understood and it's okay that she feels the way she feels, then you talk to her. Okay? The recorder's still in your left hand, and you just turn on record and talk to her.
Sounds pretty straightforward.
Get a sense of it? Yeah,
sure.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah, and the advantage of it is that there's nothing when we do that. There's nothing interfering. So the reason actually that we came up with this is that with recording and listening, what we realized was happening is that so say you're really upset about something, and you would start to make a recording, and the voice in your head would say, yeah, well, you need to disidentify. You know, you just need to get back to center and accept it. And, you know, and it all sounds really good. But what it actually is that same conditioned place, is now taking over, guiding you, being the wisdom that's going to direct you or help you through this, and we don't want that. So when you do that process of and it can be that little person, it can be you, the grown woman who is having whatever experience she's having. It could be you having something with your family or whatever is going on. And when we do that as a process, there isn't that interference from conditioning trying to cut you off and tell you a pat answer that you know. You get to actually touch into the wisdom, love, and compassion that animates us. And that's what we call the mentor. And that wisdom will talk to you and will guide you and will comfort you. So doing that whole process, the two-handed recording, letting the person talk, listening to them talk, listening to the recording of them talking, and then letting that wisdom reassure, comfort, and then listening to the whole thing, it just gives us such a stepped back, broader perspective on everything. And everybody gets to feel heard and understood. And support it, you know, like there's somebody there for you no matter what anybody is feeling or doing.
Right.
Yeah.
I will definitely give it a try.
Okay, and you let me know, all right?
Sure, thank you.
And I just want to say before I let you go I hope you make a recording for the person who picked up the phone and called into this, who is doing the email class, who took up recording and listening, that's an impressive person. So don't forget to let her know how much you appreciate her.
Okay. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was not as convincing a yeah as I was hoping for.
Well, I guess there was a lot of, I know I struggle with this and that, yeah. Guilty. I definitely don't give myself enough credit.
Yeah. And when you read the responses, if you're reading the responses when they come out, I was talking to somebody in there. I could have been talking to you. And what I said was, what we don't want to do is think of myself as somebody that I own. Because we don't. Because the human being, in our lingo, the human being belongs to life. And we're in this wonderful, privileged position of learning how to love unconditionally so that we can save that human being from suffering. So it changes our relationship, any idea we have about myself. It lets us really step back and see that I don't own this person. I'm actually in service to this human being. And it really cuts ego out of the equation. So that would be a good recording to practice too.
Okay.
Let her know. Let her know you appreciate her. Let her know you see who she is, how much she cares, that she shows up, how willing she is, how brave she is. Okay?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay, I know you can do it. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kelly. Sherry, I love that point at the end to really celebrate that willingness and commitment and appreciation of the practitioner. It's just essential.
Yeah, because, you know, we could be going through life with a real pain in the neck, right?
Yes.
We could be here with somebody who's completely unwilling, who is just devoted to self-hatred and punishment and cruelty, and is hard-headed, and no matter what, it's not going to get off of that. Would never choose kindness, but that's not the human we drew, right? We've got a human being here who has this practitioner aspect and is working hard to end the suffering. And that is something to celebrate.
Yes, it is. Yes. Mm-hmm. And Sherry, we are going to hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
All right. Well, just right on cue, huh?
Right on cue with our theme.
All right. Line. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. Recording and listening is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation in conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of Recording and Listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, a quick reminder about Recording and Listening, that the Practice Recorder app exists. That's an iPhone app. It's great for recording and listening, and folks can find it in the iPhone's App Store.
Oh, that's right. Thank you for that.
Yes,
yeah,
and it works with the new...
That's a great support.
Yes, it is a great support, and it works with the new operating system as well, iOS 12.
All right. Very good.
All right. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Rico. Am I with you guys?
Yes.
You are.
Hello, Rico.
How are you doing?
God, isn't that something? I pushed the right button. Whoa.
Isn't that, it's like a little miracle, isn't it? Like a little technological miracle.
Whoa. Well, hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi. What are you looking at?
I'm looking at how blessed I am to have found this practice. Just
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And so as I speak, I'm on supplemental oxygen, and I have this medical grade air purifier that this is Smoky San Rafael I'm calling from, and it's
is it awful?
It's the worst recorded right now. The worst air.
Oh my gosh.
And so I could complain, or I could weep in gratitude, and I choose gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else to say. It's like the recording and listening practice is so helpful, because I'll listen to a recording I made 8 or 10 months ago when the pulmonary health was really, really desperate. And I said, wow, look at that. I thought I was ready to check out, and I'm better.
And here you are.
And here I am. And the fact that this medical equipment I have, people have given to me like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of equipment. Whoa, like just what a ride. You know, like I'm not complaining anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, that is such an important perspective, isn't it? Because there are probably lots of people, given the way you describe the air quality, who are suffering and struggling. I mean, I imagine people will die as a result of it. And they don't have any of those supports. They don't have access to any of that. And it's such an important point that you make, because the ego is always wanting to find how I am a victim. And the heart is always wanting to find how blessed I am.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
In every situation, right?
And another aspect of the fruit of practice is I weep. Frequently when I get off the cushion, and I do the full prostrations, quite a few of them, and I weep for gratitude and for sorrow of what other people are going through and don't have the the possibility of practice.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think it was called, Trungpa Rinpoche talked about the warrior's heart is so tender and can be so touched by sorrow, but it's not like a drama sorrow. It's like empathy that all of us are on this path.
Yeah. So I don't know if this goes nicely with what you're saying, but it's what occurred to me. I was actually watching an interview with a woman who made it out a harrowing escape from the Paradise Fire. Several times trapped in the fire and just knowing that she was going to die and running, literally running for her life. And as soon as she got out, she's a nurse, and as soon as she got out, she headed right back to the hospital to help take care of the people who were coming out from the fire. And I think that's what you're talking about. You know, it's that no matter what's going on with her, she's thinking about other people and their need and how she can help.
Yeah. So there's something else I wanted to mention, if I had a minute here. I think it was two weeks ago, I went into a mediation with my immediate neighbors, and this is a household that has been about the most difficult experience in my life.
And oh, my goodness.
15 years of harassment and attacks and just very, 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 very difficult. A lot of alcohol involved. And so I went to this mediation, and the reality of one of the people was so vastly different than the neighborhood consensus. So I wasn't trying to get people on my side, but a lot of people know what I do for the neighborhood and what I do for example, the Africa Project. And these people have done everything they could to make problems. And I realized, my God, that's practice. Practice allows me to sit there and have the most vulgar names called at me. The mediator's trying to step in, and I could say, wow, this is not about me, is it? This is about this guy's internal suffering. Mm-hmm. And I finally understood what the Dalai Lama said. He said, you know, you could be grateful to your enemies because they show you truly how to love.
Yeah, well, yes. There. To me, there's a step before that, right? They can show you what you're not experiencing. Right?
Yes.
Which leads us to being able to love, right? So you have a glimpse of that guy's suffering, and it, you know, Rico, it's where I get to when people are terribly judgmental about how other people are. And my take on it is, I am so glad that I never wanted to have sex with children.
Jeez.
Because I don't for a second think that if I were as powerfully driven in that direction as I have been powerfully driven in my directions, I don't for a second think that I would have risen above the situation in order to make the right choice.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever been that deluded. And so to look at that fellow and realize that if you had his internal workings, you could probably be exactly like him. probably would be.
I get that. And so this dovetails. We had a conversation about 4 weeks ago, and I was describing a book on neuroscience that I had been reading, and it's it's basically the synopsis is that there's no such thing as an objective experience. Every human being
which
is
we know.
Manufacturing their and get to see this happening.
Yeah.
Just as I had come to this kind of it was really a satori to go, this book is really, it's called You Are the Universe. It's such just brilliant, brilliant. I mean, it takes time to go through it. It's not a light afternoon beach read.
Mm-hmm.
But to see
this
unfolding in front of my eyes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I walked out of there, and I was a bit shell-shocked, and yet at the same time so grateful to have had the opportunity to get a ringside seat of the human process.
Yes. And isn't that what the expression there, but for the grace of God, go I? Isn't that what that's pointing at? You know, it's just great good fortune that you didn't wind up in that state. You know, when we look at it, it's not like there were any conscious choices involved. It's not like, you know, anybody ever said, do you want to be a kind and generous person, or would you like to be vicious and hateful and miserable? At least nobody ever asked me that question.
And I transfer that insight and realization to my own process, where I'm struggling here, and I'm really, there's a new medication on the horizon. I'm really campaigning to get this, just to stay alive. And I realized the same way that I saw the people in this mediation creating their own version of reality, I in turn can choose how I respond to the stressors on my body. Whoa.
Yes.
What a brilliant.
Yes. Yes.
Please.
Well, and again, just a place of such gratitude that you know that. Right? I mean, how many people know that? How many people, if you tried to explain that, would have no idea what you were talking about?
So there's an expression I had heard very similar to what you mentioned to the first caller, and what I have in my bulletin board above my desk is, there is only life living itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives
fits right with your neuroscientist.
Amen. And so my kids are kind of frantic, and my family kind of frantic, because, I mean, I spent a lot of my life in hospitals. And so my family has seen this firsthand, like, whoa, is this guy going to be okay? Or I said, you know, I just like, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter. I mean, it's really okay. Everything is, I'm really okay.
I'm okay right now.
Well, I don't mean that, but I mean, like, if you know, if my lungs don't hold out, that's really okay. I just feel so lucky to have lived this long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And to have,
and again, you're okay now.
Exactly.
Which is really all we've got. And a great deal of, you know, catastrophizing or imagining what it's going to be like, or, you know, everybody we know who has had any kind of conscious awareness through any kind of experience will report, gosh, it wasn't at all the way I thought. So there's no sense in thinking about it ahead of time.
Amen to that. I had one last comment, if I might.
Okay, then we better wrap it up, huh?
So, suffocation, anxiety, we've spoken about this. And I'm in a new practice, and I came across this in Tricycle Magazine, and it's about writing letters to the fearful practitioner and the fearless practitioner.
Uh-huh.
Every day write a letter, and it's been such a wonderful support.
Okay, now I'm going to say what I have to say under the circumstances. Write those letters and then record them.
That's what I've been doing.
Good.
I'm right there.
Good. I just
I'm
had
right
to say that for, you know, anybody else.
I know. I'm glad you did.
Yep. So you write those, you record them, you listen to them. You know, it's a number of people in practice now write love letters every night as a practice like that. And so you write it and you listen to it before you go to bed, right, with these, you know, the ones that you're doing. Then you listen to it in the morning. Then you write another one the next day, right? Listen to that before you go to bed. Listen to it when you wake up in the morning. Put you on the track, huh?
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. That's a very, very helpful suggestion. I bet there are a number of people out there making little notes to themselves right now that they want to do that. Yeah. All right. Well, you take care of yourself and stay in touch, okay?
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Rico.
Gosho. Bye,
Gosho. Thanks for joining us, Rico. Sherry, what I heard in that conversation was the fruits of a committed practice and the benefits that accrue to us as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the deep, again, the deep gratitude that we get to that we have the practice.
Yes,
I know we throw that miracle word around, but it, I mean, when we get to that place, we realize it is a miracle. You know, it is a why me God. It really is. Because you know, am I more deserving than other people? Have I worked harder? Have I done anything to deserve this? No. Thank you. Thank you. Who are you thanking? Well, any and everything that might have had anything to do with me being in a position to have this experience. And, you know, I know that's what you're saying, too. I'm not unique in that, but just trying to describe what we're talking about there in great detail.
Yes, and it's great. I appreciate that reminder, Sherry, because after years of practice, it can be, oh, yeah, it's just practice, but it doesn't change the fact that it's still a miracle.
Yes, yeah. And when we get out in the world a little bit and we get around other people and we see the level of suffering, good people, intelligent, bright people, and just suffering at these awful levels, and all we can say is, I'm so grateful. And of course, do whatever we can to support or assist or whatever it is that we can do. But just to go back to that place of tremendous suffering is possible for human beings, and that we have a way, a process, a practice that enables us not to suffer. My God. It's breathtaking. Stunning.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Julian from Portland, Oregon.
Hello,
hey, Julian.
How are you? I'm so delighted to get on.
Well, I'm delighted that you're on. What are you up to?
I had a session with my Zen coach today, and she encouraged me to call and ask a question I had about meditation.
Oh, very good. I hope I have an answer.
So sometimes when I'm sitting, where it's sort of like I have ascended above the cloud layer of thought, and it gets quieter, and I can't tell if I'm dropping into something or zoning out. And I know that I still want to be present in meditation, but I guess I've just never quite experienced it before, and I wanted to sort of pitch the experience and ask about it.
Yeah. Well, here's my encouragement for that experience and just about every other experience in life, and especially in meditation. Just pay attention. Don't believe anything about it. Don't make anything of it. Don't cling to it. Don't push it away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? That's what's going on right now. It's interesting. You know, it's interesting. And you can certainly be interested in the sense of paying attention, but not to, you know what I mean.
Well, not to create some kind of story about the experience.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Which will be taken over, which will, you know, you'll start clinging, making it, you know, the voices will make meaning out of it and then try to get you to cling to it, which will all be in service to distracting you.
Right. Yep. Yeah. I suspected your answer might be something like that.
Yeah. It's the best.
Okay,
it's one of the things I love best about Zen, right? It kind of epitomizes, you know, that cliched story about the old farmer with the one son and the one horse, you know,
I don't think I know the one.
Oh, well, the horse runs away. And all the neighbors, oh, that's terrible. And the old guy says, well, maybe yes, maybe no. And the horse, I'm really butchering this because I can't remember the details, but you'll get the gist. So the son goes after the horse and finds the horse, and there are other horses. And so he brings back the horse and all the other horses. And people say, oh, this is wonderful. And the old guy says, well, maybe yes, maybe no. So the son is going to break one of the horses, and he gets on and he gets thrown off and he breaks his leg. Oh my gosh, that's terrible. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Hmm. So it just goes on like that, right? The army comes and they're taking all able-bodied young men, and he can't go because he has broken. Well, that's wonderful.
Right, maybe no.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that really is our attitude in Zen practice. You know, well, we really don't know. And so the rules always stay the same. You know, we're just here paying attention.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I can see how if I somehow got into a story of that is the place you want to get to with meditation, that's the right way, then anytime I sit and don't have that experience, it's wrong.
Oh yeah.
So that's not helpful at all.
Not helpful at all. And it's such a perfect example, because those voices would make it seem, and of course those voices are experts in meditation at this point, right? They would tell you
what
is a good meditation, what is it, and exactly what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. And so if we really get it, that no matter what that conversation is, no matter whether it sounds supportive or whether it sounds critical or whatever it is, its only purpose is to get you to focus on it instead of being present.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can much more easily let go of any feeling we have that we should be looking to it to tell us, is this good meditation? Is that should I be going? Maybe this is the one. This is a great one not to fall for. So in our practice, of course, we count to 10 over and over and over and over. And we count at the bottom of the exhalation, right? And then you realize that you're getting distracted. And so the voice says, well, maybe you should count on the inhalation. So we do that for a while, and then we get distracted. Well, maybe you should count on both. And we have fallen into such a trap and don't even know it because, well, it seems like a good idea and it's harmless and I am sitting, but we've fallen into a trap of looking to conditioned mind for guidance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very helpful. I had an experience today where it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I had the thought, oh, you better sit today. And I realized I already had. And I think I have this it was a little bit of a should, first of all. So that's good. But I realized, you know, it's another thing that conditioning sometimes has on a loop, like, oh, you really should do this. And it was kind of funny because I already did. it's like, well, you can't get me on that one. But also, it was kind of profound because I realized, you know, I don't really know exactly how to explain this, but, you know, there's no one out there tallying up there if I do it or don't. I did do it, you know, and that that is the benefit. The benefit when I sit, whatever that is, if I go to bed thinking, "Oh, you really should have sat," it doesn't matter. There's no
that's right.
No talent. No one keeping.
Nobody's keeping score.
Me. And so when that happened, I thought, well, that's just a voice that wants. If I had not say I hadn't sat today, that's just a voice designed to make me feel bad, and it's totally irrelevant.
Exactly right.
'Cause I already did anyway.
That's exactly right. And, again, we don't want to fall for that voice wants you to sit. That's why it's reminding you, oh, no. As you say, it's just, it's there. If sitting is important to you, then that's a subject that we can discuss. Ego is happy to weigh in on that. And it'll play both sides of it, right? Well you
will.
Really should.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't. You need to feel bad. You did. Okay, well, you don't have to sit today. You sat yesterday. So it's just working every angle all the time. You just go, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Greeting over here, boss.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you both so much. I really appreciate
it. Oh, you're welcome. And you're welcome. Yeah. Glad to hear from you. All right.
Glad to
Take
hear
care.
From you.
Good
all
night.
Right. Gotcha. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Julian. And Sherry, we're at 5:57.
Oh, I don't think we should risk it. Do you?
You were perilously close to the top of
the
hour.
We are perilously close. Yeah, perilously close. And, you know, on the morning show, we often think, oh, we've got 3 minutes. That'll be fine. And then, you know, we're 8 minutes in. Because it's hard. It's hard to get me stopped.
Practice is exciting.
It's exciting. And I am perpetually excited by it. So, yeah. So, well, I've enjoyed it tremendously, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we'll talk again ere long, I believe.
Perfect. I will greatly look forward to it. Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Good night, Michael. Thank you.
Good night.